mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, diversity and inclusion programs have been a lightning rod of controversy, but if you can see past the politics, new research finds it can have a positive impact on the bottom line for your business. We'll explain. Also this morning, June is Alzheimer's Awareness Month. While there is still no cure for dementia, we know now more than ever, including ways to keep the brain healthy and early indicators of cognitive decline. And it's going to be a summer full of food and nutrition programs from the Hancock County OSU Extension. Jennifer Little will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, June 10th, 2024. If you are looking for something to do for Dad or with Dad this Father's Day, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources is offering a free fishing weekend Saturday and Sunday. Residents of all ages will be permitted to fish on public lakes, ponds, rivers, and streams without having to purchase a license. So take your dad fishing. For suggestions on where to fish and other helpful tips, visit ohiodnr.gov. So just want to throw that out there. And it is a free fishing weekend in the state of Ohio for Father's Day, if you're making your plans here. By the way, today we begin the 23rd year of Good Mornings. Yep, kicking off our 23rd season, if you will, our 23rd year of getting up very, very early in the morning to entertain and inform you. And so hope you appreciate that. Just thought I'd throw that out there on a Monday. 23 years. I often say this job was a lot easier when I was 20 years younger. And today it especially feels that way. You know what I mean? That, you hit that work anniversary and you... Yeah. Let's see here. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, things worth talking about. This week, they will hold more presidential primaries. It's all really academic at this point because we know who the nominees are going to be. They're going to go to the polls in North Dakota tomorrow and also Nevada. And this was kind of interesting because yesterday, was it yesterday or Saturday? Over the weekend, former President Trump was campaigning in Nevada, and he raised some eyebrows when he promised. Now, mind you, Nevada, very big on the service industry. I mean, you think of all of the tourism and the, you know, the gambling and, you know, all of that. So a very tourist-centric economy in Nevada, obviously. And so the former president raised some eyebrows and grabbed some press when he announced that his plan to make tips tax-free, to not levy income taxes on tips. For boy, did that get a response from the crowd. A lot of people count on tips that work in the state of Nevada. So you imagine making that tax-free? I don't know how the state would feel about that. Obviously, that would be at the federal level. I don't think that the president could do anything about state taxation of tips, but from a federal standpoint, as he says, he wants to make tipped income non-taxable. I don't know. We'll see if that there's any teeth to that, or if that's just a campaign promise. But he made it in the right place. You're going to be in Nevada. You make a promise like that. That's going to get headlines. This is kind of interesting. A new survey finds that 37% of Americans believe that they would be a better president than either of the current candidates for the 2024 election. 37%, a little more than one in three, believe that they would be a better president. And by the way, the survey was evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. 500 of each were polled. They also found 61% of Americans plan on watching the first presidential debate, which is coming up at the end of this month. So just a little over a couple of weeks from now. Americans are curious as to what the candidates will say regarding the cost of living, inflation, and immigration. No big surprise that those are the top three issues, according to those in the survey. 51% of Republicans say the issue of immigration is at the top of the list. 45% of Democrats are concerned about abortion and health care access. And 29% of Americans think that state laws should be changed to allow felons the right to vote. And I guess they put that question in the survey in light of Donald Trump's recent conviction in hush money trial, felony charges there. So I don't know, throw that in there just for good measure, I guess. Kind of interesting. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories, among the first things that you need to know this morning. Did you go on a date this weekend? It looks like more and more young singles are not using dating apps as much anymore. For a while there, dating apps were having their moment. That was a big thing, dating apps. They're dating apps for everything. I mean, there are just a whole slew of dating apps, from general dating apps to very specific, specialized dating apps. But a recent report from Eventbrite found that young people are seeking out in-person events more and more to meet their partners. Eventbrite is an event management platform, so keep that in mind. Obviously, this is something that they would want to see, more people going to in-person events. But they say fatigue from the endless swiping on dating apps, swipe right, swipe left, you know the deal. The endless swiping on dating apps is causing young adults to turn to more authentic settings like hobby groups in search for someone that's someone special. Almost half of the Gen Z participants that were surveyed said connecting with others who have similar interests is one of the biggest challenges with online dating. So, now, that being said, in some places, online dating is still the preferred method of meeting that someone special. And to that end, in Japan, they are actually, the Tokyo government is actually creating its own dating app. The government is creating its own dating app because they are concerned about the trend of singles in that country. The number of marriages in Japan is down rather significantly. Last year, there were 474,000, almost 475,000 marriages in Japan. But just 2 years ago, in 2022, there were 504,000. So they've seen this decline year over year in the number of marriages, and they're concerned about this. So the government in Tokyo is creating its own dating app to try and combat this trend. Media reports suggest that the new app will require ID verification, will make use of tax records to prove income, and they will require a signed form stating that you are ready to get married. The app may also ask for height, job, education level, etc., 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 all of the normal stuff that dating apps will inquire about. But they are going to use tax records to verify your income and require a form stating you are ready to get married. They are taking this seriously. About reversing the trend, declining number of marriages. They're serious about reversing that trend in Japan, apparently. City Hall, so far, has not responded to these reports. They're working on their own dating app. What could possibly go wrong there? And finally this morning, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, and I guess this would in some ways relate to dating and coupling and marriage and all of that. A new study out of Oxford University finds that Viagra can help provide blood to a man's brain. Yes, that's right. Sildenafil, which is the active ingredient in Viagra, which increases blood flow to, you know, has a similar effect on the brain, they say, and this could help prevent dementia. That was what they were trying to learn, whether this could help stave off memory loss. Now, this is a small study, Oxford University, 75 participants in the trial who had experienced a minor stroke, took three treatments. There was a control group, and then there was, you know, the Viagra group. And they found that Viagra increased blood flow to the brain, and patients on the medication experienced fewer negative side effects. Professor Peter Rothwell said the findings highlight the potential for preventing vascular dementia using existing drugs. So, I don't know what might come of that, but I thought it was worth mentioning. And who knows, that could be this day's news of most lasting significance, as they say. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly sunny today, a high around 70. Just a few clouds tonight, a low around 50. Flag City Honor Flight will be conducting its second of four missions this year on Tuesday when they fly 91 veterans to Washington, D.C.
Flag City Honor Flight is a 100% volunteer organization, so nobody's paid. Everybody's doing this to help out the veterans get to Washington, D.C. to see the memorials that were built in their honor.
Flag City Honor Flight President Steve Schultz says the public is invited to a welcome home celebration to honor the returning veterans on Tuesday night at 8:30 at Grand Air Hangar at Toledo Express Airport. Get more on Flag City Honor Flight in the story on our website. A recycling transition is underway in Hancock County. The Hancock County Commissioners, with the cooperation and approval of the Hancock County Solid Waste Management District, have contracted with a third-party service provider, Rumpke, to provide new collection bins and collection services that will replace the existing units throughout the county. The Hancock County Solid Waste Management District will still oversee the program and says it's confident that the units will be serviced timely and regularly by Rumpke. Get more on this transition in this story on our website. Medicinal marijuana dispensaries can now start applying for their recreational licenses with the Ohio Division of Cannabis Control.
Once a dispensary is approved, it will be up to them to decide when they start selling recreationally to adults. At this time, only facilities already licensed through the medical marijuana program here in Ohio will be able to apply for their recreational or dual-use permit. There are currently 126 medical marijuana dispensaries here in Ohio, and the division expects that a majority of them will apply for this dual-use permit.
ONN's Kiara Lake reporting. Hancock Public Health is letting people know that it'll be conducting mosquito spraying in Hancock County communities over the summer months. The mosquito spraying will take place periodically from now through September. Anyone who wants to have their residents excluded from having the sprayer go by should contact the health department, and we have their number and email in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, at the risk of opening up a can of worms here, DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, has been a lightning rod of political controversy in recent years. But if we can remove the politics from it for a moment here, new research indicates that diversity and inclusion in the workplace increases job performance and talent retention. And that is something that is critical for businesses right now. Well, all the time, but right now especially. And joining us this morning is Dr. Kimberly Underwood. She is the chair of the Center for Workplace Diversity and Inclusion Research at the University of Phoenix. Dr. Underwood, you call it workplace belonging. Explain what that term means and why it is important in the context of the work environment.
Absolutely. And Chris, thank you for having me. So when we think about belonging overall, it is a sense of just feeling accepted and included by those around you. Specifically in the workplace, it means individuals feel that they are being treated equitably, they are respected, they can feel comfortable contributing to organizational outcomes, and they can bring their full authentic selves into the workplace. And I have to give full credit to millennials for bringing this concept to the forefront. After the onset of the pandemic, we started talking a lot about belonging within the workplace as we started to look at what the new normal looked like, mm-hmm. and specifically how work was now redefined in this instance. However, one of the things that we saw was that millennials, even before this, had started getting us to think about what it meant to belong in the workplace. And specifically, they had shown and they had started to show us that, you know, coming into the workplace, working 40 years, getting the watch and retiring did not have to be the outcome and the option for going into work. There were different ways that we could approach work. And also, if it was shown that you weren't appreciated in the workplace, mm-hmm. you weren't valued in the workplace, you didn't feel that you belonged, people would leave
yeah.
and find different outcomes and options. And so within our research center, in thinking about this, through two parallel studies focused on both higher education and the workforce, we explored how the presence or absence of social capital impacts a sense of belonging for students and workers of color. We all recognize in many instances that graduation leads to employment.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is an ongoing disconnect surrounding the role social capital plays in the process of building continuous networks that support these groups.
So talk a little bit more about this research and what you have discovered about belonging, this workplace belonging. And again, not just the workplace, but also higher education. Kind of encapsulate this for us.
Absolutely. In both studies, strong feelings of belonging were associated with the presence of social capital, meaning the resources that arise from the web of relationships that we build with those around us and that contribute to our professional goals. So findings from our higher education study specifically suggest that students of color experience a higher sense of belonging when there is the strong presence of support services, faculty interactions, and career development assistance. And then findings from our workplace study suggest relationship building, such as mentoring and sponsorship, opportunities to network, and building collaborations are important to employees of color when reflecting upon their sense of belonging within the workforce. And what this suggests overall in looking at these two studies together is that there is the need for better collaboration within higher education and workforces to create a more seamless transition for these populations and help to assist in building these networks that support belongingness within organizations.
So as we mentioned at the outset, this whole subject has been a lightning rod of political controversy, as you are well aware, in recent years. So how do we remedy? I mean, you've got the research, though, that backs this up. So how do we remove the politics and create more of this belonging, especially, again, in our workplaces and in higher education? Because, you know, obviously, as we said, businesses, they don't want turnover. They want to retain their talent. They want to improve job performance. And as it relates to higher education, we don't want kids going to school and then dropping out. That it benefits no one, and it's just a big waste of time and money. So how do we remove all of the negativity surrounding this and create that kind of belonging?
And Chris, you're spot on. I think that when you talked about the business case of this, right? Businesses want to be successful. Businesses should want to make sure that all of their employees feel that they belong within the organization. Nothing political about that. Each one of us has an innate need to feel that we belong both within society and the places that we work. And so leaders need to take a more active role, first and foremost, in this process of employee development, and move beyond simply providing the resources for example, onboarding or just functioning within one's current position. When leaders become co-pilots within the continued development of their employees, it helps all employees to identify, utilize, and benefit from resources that are not always readily known or available to all. And then also for an employer who may be here today thinking about how to build belonging in their own organization, mm-hmm. it's important to begin looking at belongingness through the lenses of your employees. If we were to compare, for example, the workforce now to real estate, our study suggests that it is a buyer's market. And what I mean by that is employees are making strategic decisions
yeah.
that benefit them about what they need within working environments. And many within our study specifically noted a willingness to leave their organizations if they feel they don't belong. And so, therefore, belongingness is just smart business for organizations, and it's something that they should consider.
Yeah. Not to put words in your mouth, but would it be fair to say that we need to also overcome this false narrative that inclusion of one group necessarily means the exclusion of another?
I think that's fair to say. When we talk about belongingness and when we talk about inclusion, inclusion means making sure that everyone is included and has a place in the organization. And what inclusion also means is looking to see where and what groups have been historically underrepresented and making sure that they are included within this process.
Mm-hmm.
They're included within the organization. They're included within strategy and considerations. And that leads to a sense of belonging for all. And so, therefore, while our study focused on, you know, a specific group, the results benefit all within the organization. And it should make leaders think about, hey, where do I have underrepresentations in my organization? You know, what groups feel that they don't belong within my organization?
Yeah.
And then how do I start to address?
Again, Dr. Kimberly Underwood is chair of the Center for Workplace Diversity and Inclusion Research at the University of Phoenix. Where do we get more information about this research and about maybe some of these strategies to better address these issues within the workplace?
Well, we are presenting both of these studies on June 11th within our annual Inclusive Leadership Summit. This event is open to the public, and you can register at phoenix.edu/inclusive leaders, and I hope to see all of you there.
Dr. Underwood, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Chris, thank you for having me.
Well, from the Health and Medical File this morning, about 6 million Americans have Alzheimer's today, and that number is expected to grow significantly as our population continues to age to more than 80 million seniors in the next 15 years, nearly 95 million by 2060. With June being Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month, joining us this morning is Kim Elliott, Chief Nursing Officer at Brookdale Senior Living. And Kim, there is still no cure for Alzheimer's or any other form of dementia for that matter, but we do know more than we used to about some of the contributing factors that can stave off memory loss, right?
That is correct. That is correct. You know, there's always research going on. Hopefully one day there's going to be a cure, but there's certainly things we can do.
So let's talk about some of the highlights on that. First of all, physical activity is very important for the health of seniors, physically, obviously, but also for their brains.
You know, physical activity is so important for all ages. You know, we think about physical activity and think, oh, I want to work out because I want to get in shape or lose weight, be healthy. But really, even when it comes to seniors, it's like physical activity is needed to help prevent this type of decline and getting Alzheimer's disease. The aerobic exercise really promotes your brain health. It helps you learn and remember, make plans, concentrate. So When you age, seniors often have an excuse not to exercise, such as a bad knee, a bad back, but it's so important that they keep moving, even if it's just walking on a daily basis.
And that goes along with what we have known for quite some time, is that just like the physical activity that can help your body in a myriad of ways, we're giving your brain a workout, mental workouts also make a big difference.
That is right. You've got to keep your brain sharp.
You also talk about the importance of socialization with respect to seniors' health.
Yeah, socialization is so important. And, you know, we experienced that in our lifetime. We experienced that through the pandemic of what happens when you're isolated in your home, you talk to fewer people, you're not out in social settings, you're not around large groups of people. You know, sometimes our social skills declined or we felt anxiety or anxious when we went out into crowds. So think about a senior that no longer has a place to go every day or doesn't get out and drive. They have that same sense of loneliness. So it really decreases their social skills. Their mind is not stimulated. It increases their memory loss. You just naturally see them decline. So staying active, social, your entire life is something that's so important. And the importance of that never stops. So being able to have those connections, and if they can't get out of the house, having somebody to go and visit and have conversations with them will also help.
And just to underscore what you were talking about with respect to socialization and keeping active on that level, it's kind of a twofold thing. Obviously, part of that is to, again, keep the brain active when you're socializing, you're doing things, participating in activities, or just having conversations with other people. That keeps the gray matter moving. But also, in terms of mental health and mental illness, staving off depression, anxiety, loneliness, again, all of these things, as they come back to, can contribute to cognitive decline in general.
That is so true. Our emotional health, it's amazing how just a simple thing of lack of socialization or a lack of physical exercise can make an impact on everything we do. And it can make a huge impact on what our later years will be like.
Now, having said all of that, and we talk about some of the ways to, you know, prevent cognitive decline, what are some of the early warning signs of cognitive decline and Alzheimer's specifically?
You know, the early warning signs are often subtle. You don't always notice them unless you're really paying attention. Most of the times people are diagnosed, the family thinks back and thinks, I remember 9 months ago when we were at such an event, you know, that stood out to me. And they go back and think, oh, there were signs there. I just didn't see them.
Yeah.
So being aware, but poor judgment, you know, making poor decisions or decisions they typically wouldn't make, having difficulty with just day-to-day tasks. And really, the person you know, they may have been very friendly and outgoing and easy to get along with, and all of a sudden they're moody or irritable or rude to individuals. So that those are some things that it's enough for you to think, okay, something could be going on here.
And again, just to underscore what you're saying, sometimes those things can manifest themselves years ahead of a formal diagnosis.
That's right. You know, you hear people say that, you know, oh, I lost my keys or I lost my glasses. I must be getting Alzheimer's. Keep in mind that it's not the fact that you lost your keys, but a person with Alzheimer's, once they find them, they'll look at them. They're not sure what the key is for. They don't know how to use it, the fact that it's supposed to go in a keyhole. So it's not the fact that it's just misplaced. It's the fact that, you know, just looking at objects and not knowing the next step is common.
Mm. Now, knowing all of these things, from the prevention strategies, ways to stave off this, and recognizing the early signs, talk a little bit about why all of that is important in the context of the projected increase in the prevalence of dementia, as we were just mentioning, juxtaposed with the realities of the availability and affordability of long-term care.
Yes. I mean, if you think about it, with all the research that's being done, I mean, there are treatments available and they continue to come out every year that may help with those early stages. So if you are aware and you're paying attention and you know what to look for, there may be treatment at that stage that could help the decline. However, you know, if it does manifest quicker than that and you need help, I think the biggest thing is nobody can go through this alone, and you can be, you know, with years and years of experience with it. Every case is a little different. So being able to have an expert, somebody that's dealing with it and have that support is so important.
Again, June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. We are joined by Kim Elliott. She is Chief Nursing Officer at Brookdale Senior Living. Where do folks get more information?
they can go to brookdale.com/memory, and there they'll find resources, family partnership programs, and just really experts reach out to us, always willing to lend a hand.
Kim, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
How would you like to find out that your boyfriend, soon-to-be fiancé, has been cheating on you while you are shopping for engagement rings? That would be the absolute worst time. Well, maybe not the worst time to find out that your boyfriend has been cheating on you, but I would think that would be right up there. While you are shopping for engagement rings, this is what happened to one woman in Australia. She posted about this online. Apparently, she and her boyfriend were soon to be engaged after a 2-year relationship. So they go to the jewelry store and they pick out an engagement ring. And as her boyfriend went to purchase the engagement ring, he whips out his credit card. And lo and behold, the sale was declined. The reason: he had purchased a ring for another woman just 1 month earlier. And so the credit card company apparently decided that this has got to be a mistake. He's buying an engagement ring when he's already bought one. So clearly there has to be some fraud going on. Well, there was fraud going on, but it turns out he had been seeing the girl he tells you not to worry about for the past 6 months, and he had already bought her an engagement ring and given it to her, and then tried to... This is the woman posted about this online. Apparently, she called off the engagement after discovering the affair. You would imagine. Ooh, man, that would be embarrassing. That would be embarrassing. Elsewhere in the broken news, bad timing there. Part of it. And the credit card company is just, trying to, look out for the guy, make sure that he doesn't get swindled. Turns out that he was the one doing the swindling in a whole different way. Elsewhere from the broken news file, the international file, the broken news, a pub in British Columbia, Canada, has been penalized for a second time for allowing customers to play pool at the bar. Now, this might not seem like a big deal, play around a pool while having a beer, but the Irish bar in British Columbia, it's owned by Johnny Fox, Johnny Fox's Irish Bar, apparently has a liquor license but does not have a license for games. Their license only includes food and liquor, but no games. The bar has been fined for this exact same reason once before, and they claimed in their defense that they moved the tables and took away the pool cues, but some customers might have brought in their own pool cues to play. Did you not think that that was going to happen? As a result, the pub now has been penalized. They are not going to be allowed to serve alcohol for 3 days. So that's going to be a dry 3 days. But can they still play pool? That's what I want to know. Anyway. Well, we moved the tables. We took away the cues. People still got around it. I don't know how. Let's see here. What else is going on in the broken news from the state of Florida? A woman is under arrest after she allegedly called 911 on herself during an attempted carjacking. Apparently, Christy Turman was at a car dealership and called 911 to report that she was going to take a car. According to the Lee County Sheriff's Office, the reason Ms. Terman phoned 911 and turned herself in because she was mistakenly under the impression that if she called, she could do it legally. As long as I tell the authorities in advance, then everything is legal. Here's a hint. It's not. It's still not legal. She was arrested and faces multiple charges. Well, I called. Speaking of people being so dumb as to pretty much turn themselves in, a man from Southern California is now behind bars on suspicion of directing a YouTube video that features women shooting fireworks at a speeding Lamborghini from a helicopter.
Wait, what?
Apparently, federal prosecutors say Alex Choi posted the video to YouTube last 4th of July. The video was titled Destroying a Lamborghini with Fireworks. And that's pretty much what they were attempting to do. It was filmed in El Mirage in a remote part of the San Bernardino County desert. And apparently the women were shooting fireworks at a speeding Lamborghini from a helicopter. How they got a hold of the helicopter, I have no idea. Whatever happened to the Lamborghini, I have no idea. But you post this on YouTube with the title, Destroying a Lamborghini with Fireworks, that's going to get some attention. Mr. Choi has been charged with one count of causing the placement of an explosive or incendiary device on an aircraft. Because they were shooting fireworks from a helicopter! What are you thinking? Where would we be without dumb people like this? And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is a big oops. This is a big oops. And this is one of those things that you know you're having a bad day when something like this comes along. Larissa Pye got a message that her father was getting married on June 2nd. She was so ecstatic that she plunked down over $2,500 and hopped a flight from the Canary Islands, where she lives, to Cheshire, England, 1,700 miles away, so that she could be there for her father's wedding on June 2nd. What she didn't realize was that the wedding was set for June 2nd, 2025. So she got there a year early for the wedding. By the time Larissa's family realized her mistake and tried to contact her, they tried to call her. Because apparently she posted that she was at the airport going to fly in for her dad's wedding. And her family saw that and said, wait a minute, dad's not getting married this June 2nd. It's next June 2nd. So they tried to call her. But by the time they saw the post and tried to alert her, she was already on the plane and her phone was in airplane mode. And by that time it was too late. So when she got there, she was met by family and her dad with the bad news that she had missed her dad's wedding date by a year. On the bright side, she said, she got an unplanned vacation and got to spend some quality time with her dad and his fiance while having plenty of time to plan for the real date. She got there a year early. Well, I guess it's better to be a year too early than a year too late. But there you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
You don't think twice about wearing your seatbelt. Going boating? Real boaters wear a life jacket. It's easy to do. Accidents can happen quickly, and if you're not wearing your life jacket, you won't have time to put it on if it's stowed. So pick a comfortable life jacket and wear it. Remember, life jackets are for everyone, regardless of your age or swimming ability. Have fun, make memories, and boat responsibly. This message brought to you by the National Safe Boating Council and U.S. Coast Guard.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Father's Day coming up on Sunday, and spending this year for Dad is expected to reach $22.4 billion in 2024, according to the National Retail Federation. Now, with their latest estimates, $22.4 billion, what they say we're going to spend on Dad, that is just shy of last year's record, $22.9 billion. Three-quarters of consumers plan to celebrate Father's Day. On average, those shopping for Father's Day plan to spend $189.81 on gifts and celebrations. Again, slightly lower than last year's record of $196.23. However, that being said, and this is noteworthy, if you have kids between the ages of 25 and 34, they are expected to be the biggest spenders this year at an average of $275.67 per. So not too shabby if your kids are in that age range. Greeting cards remain the most popular Father's Day gifts. 58% of those in the survey are going to get a greeting card for Dad, followed by clothing, 54%. 52% will be doing something special, a special outing for Dad or with Dad. 48% will get gift cards for that special man in their life. And 31% will buy personal care items. So cologne, shaving cream, you know, that kind of thing. And by the way, it is not just Dad. We talk about spending for Dad. It's not just Dad or stepdad getting a gift. 26% of those in the survey are purchasing a gift for a husband. 10% will buy a Father's Day gift for their son. 8% will buy a gift for their brother. 8% for a friend, and 6% will buy a Father's Day gift for their grandfather, which I actually was thinking that should be a little bit higher, shouldn't it? I mean, there should be more, I mean, yeah, buy for Dad or stepdad, but grandfather should be right up there as well, I would think, but just 6% on that list. I thought it was interesting more people will buy a gift for a friend than for their grandfather. That could be because maybe grandfather has passed on, is no longer around, so that probably skews those numbers a little bit. But bottom line, and I thought this was kind of interesting, for comparison, because we always want to know where Dad stands with respect to Mom in the parental hierarchy, for comparison, a month ago we spent $33.5 billion on Mom. And again, $22.4 billion for Dad. So, and an average of $254 per person compared to $190 or so this year. So, Dad's still getting the short end of the stick. So, it is going to be a summer full of food and nutrition programs. The Hancock County OSU Extension, Jennifer Little, is with us from the Extension office with details on what's happening in the coming weeks. We head into the warmer weather. Before we get into some of the programs, speaking of food and nutrition and so on, want to mention that the community health assessment is going on. This is in conjunction with the Be Healthy Now organization in Hancock County, the collaborative, which has its roots with the Extension office. And I know you're still a part of Hancock County OSU Extension, still part of that collaborative.
Yes, there is. It's part of the local kind of health, you know, making sure that we are a healthy community. Mm-hmm. And so we have Blanchard Valley Health System, public health, of course, have taken large roles in making this happen. Mm-hmm. And it's an option right now. They're in the stage where they're collecting information from local citizens. So they call it, you might hear it abbreviated as the CHA, Community Health Assessment. Mm-hmm. But there's actually an opportunity for people to take a brief, like 20 question survey. It's all anonymous, but it's just trying to gather information about how people feel about the health of our community, the physical mm-hmm. health and access to things to keep people healthy. So
yeah.
We are encouraging as many people as possible to, right. There's a QR code you can use or a SurveyMonkey, but again, it's all anonymous and it just takes about 10 to 20 minutes to fill it out. And it's all just, you know, kind of multiple choice sorts of things.
And then I believe later in the year, we'll get the results of that and we'll be able to kind of assess where we are health-wise within the community, hence the name.
Yes, and, yes. And then out of that, they're also, as a part of this assessment process, they're doing the survey. They're also going to be doing some focus groups. So if people are invited to be a part of a focus group, take time to participate because it's important that our, you know, our community voices are heard.
And obviously out of that comes strategies and plans moving forward with respect to keeping the community healthy. And you know, you use that with respect to programming and, you know, plans and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
wide-ranging
use.
Out of the assessment comes the community health improvement plan, which is kind of, again, a kind of a collaborative effort of the Be Healthy Now. And, and we strategize ways to meet different apparent needs. You know, when in the past, things have been considered when we talk about mental health and abuse. We also talk about diabetes has been a thing in the past. And so, yes, organizations like Extension are able to use that data to help plan our own programming efforts to meet the needs of our community.
So if you've ever said to yourself, boy, what we could really use is this kind of program or that kind of program, we need more of this or that within the community, this is your opportunity to
make
your voices heard.
Yes, yes.
You've got more information about that, I know, on your Facebook page, and folks will find, will hear about it elsewhere as well, but just wanted to mention that because, again, Extension, a part of that collaborative. Now, some of the things that you have coming up here over the next several weeks, where do we start here?
Well, oh my goodness. Well, Summer Meals have kicked off, and Summer Meals is an initiative through at Glenwood Middle School, and so that is open for kids birth to 18. It's a free summer meal program, and it's runs June 3rd to July 25th, and it goes Monday through Thursday. And on Thursdays, kids that come can take home a meal for Friday. So it's kind of a way to fill that gap from school lunches over the summer. And we are participating as a part of providing programming. So we'll be there Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Someone from Extension will either be Joanne Fife from SNAP Ed. It'll be 4-H folks or myself doing fun programming for the kids and families that attend. And that's always a good time. They have come eat lunch in a nice air-conditioned environment and then have some fun things to do along with that.
Okay. Also, the Hancock County Farmers Market underway, and I know you're involved with the, it says here, the Power of Produce Club.
The Power of Produce Club, yes. That is an initiative, a kind of a partner with Blanchard Valley Health System and the Farmers Market and Extension. The kids who come, they can come and register, and it's for open for ages 4 to 15. Okay. And kids who are part of that, they register, and it's free to register. And every time they come to the market, they kind of check in at the Welcome Center, and they receive $4 worth of tokens that they can take and spend on fresh fruits and vegetables. And it's a great way to encourage kids to try fruits and vegetables, and it's a great way to get them excited about eating, you know, local foods. Mm-hmm. And and we, along with that, of course, are doing fun activities for kids and families. Last week, again, the market runs on Thursdays from 4 to 6. We had over 50 kids make their own market bags, reusable market bags. And last year, we did this at the beginning of the season, and it was so fun to see the kids come week after week, bringing their little market bag, filling with, and we would encourage them to come back and show us what they bought, you know, and it's always a good time. They have fun.
How often do we talk about the fact that we want to get our kids eating healthy, getting them involved in the kitchen? This is kind of another way of doing that.
Yes.
Picking out their own food.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So the more that kids are involved in that, either growing foods in the garden or helping grocery shop and pick out foods that they like to try, and or helping out in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Those are all ways to get kids invested in that process. And when they're invested, they're more likely to try it and develop those healthy eating habits for a lifetime.
The good news is when they're helping to shop at the farmer's market, you know it's going to be good stuff, not pulling off the sugar-filled cereals from the grocery aisle.
Yes. The market vendors, I really feel like out of this program and some of the other initiatives that are going on at the market, there's a real incentive for people selling produce to come. And the vendors are really getting into it, too. And they really take time with the kids and they help them make their little choices. And it's fun. It's really fun to watch.
So bring the kids down the farmer's market on Thursdays. And then you were mentioning, too, right before we went on the air, a program in conjunction with Blanchard Valley Center. Right?
Oh, yes.
Cutting Up in the Kitchen series.
Earlier in the year, I had conversations with some of the leadership who work with adults in a transitions program, helping adults live more independently, those living with developmental delays or disabilities. And so we came up with the idea for a cooking series. And so it's a 5-week cooking series that we're doing with some of their selected adults. We do a small group. It's usually about 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend some time talking about meal planning and nutrition. And then we all cook supper together. And it is so wonderful to see these folks learning some new abilities to manage and care for themselves by cooking in the kitchen.
Yep.
And it's wonderful because they have such a positive attitude, excited about trying new foods and trying new skills. So, whether it's chopping up fruits and vegetables, or whether it's cracking an egg and cooking it themselves, it's been a real rewarding program. I get
Very
as much
cool.
out of it as they do, I think. So it's wonderful, and so we're in the midst of our second cohort of that group. So
awesome stuff. Anything else to highlight that we got coming up over the next several weeks here?
Well, as we're thinking about produce, thinking about gardening, food preservation is always something we start thinking about this time of year, because as people are getting their gardens going, and hopefully they're being very successful. We'll be doing our food preservation palooza. It's kind of an open house that I've done for the last couple of years, and it's a chance for people to come in and bring their canners. They can have their gauges checked. That's free. We have recipes. We have displays. We have information about different ways to food preserve. And plus, we have some resources and door prizes. So it's a kind of a good time. It's an open house. It's not necessarily a sit-down session. It's kind of come and go. And that is going to be July 12th. From 1 to 3 p.m. We've just got the poster put together, so you'll be seeing that on our Facebook page and website. Mm-hmm. And along with that, there's also some food preservation webinars going on. Our food preservation team with Extension, they are putting on a series of 6 webinars, a couple every month. And those webinars are actually being recorded. So if you want to know more about canning or other forms of food preservation, you can actually go to the OSU Extension Family and Consumer Sciences website, and you can watch recorded webinars on demand about different types of, and some people, it's much easier to learn by seeing someone demonstrate it. You can read about it or look at a recipe, but when you see someone else doing it, sometimes that just really helps it click, and it helps provide that assurance about, okay, am I doing this right? And if you have any food preservation questions, you could also call our office or email me at little.18.osu.edu. And I'm glad to give you some more information.
And that's important stuff to get right. You don't want to do that wrong.
Correct.
any number of reasons.
Unfortunately, there is a lot of information online, and people just kind of sharing how they do things. They try to simplify or try to make it a little bit easier. And when you cut some corners, not a good thing.
Are you saying that all of the information online is not necessarily good information? I am shocked.
Right.
But you know that the stuff from the OSU Extension is going to be good, reliable information.
Yes, we can't. So, we want to be evidence-based always and making sure that we're doing things.
We have a link on our webpage for more information about all of that stuff and more going on the Hancock County OSU Extension. Jennifer Little is with us once again. Jennifer, thanks very much for the update. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Chris. You have a great day.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the fight over AI and copyright protection, the legal question over who owns what, and what's fair game to train those bold new algorithms isn't necessarily as easily defined as you might think. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.